Well, Alan Tolman, okay. There'd been some chit-chat about a biography, and because I'm not a professional biographer, once I did the two edit jobs on the poems and essays, I was off writing Radical Affections, which is my own little, you know, book of essays on the New American Poetry. So I was doing that after. But, you know, Ellen Tolman, I don't know, do you know who she is?
I never met her, but okay. Warren Tolman's wife.
Yes. Warren Tolman's ex-wife, yes.
Right.
And actually, she was the one, not Warren, who knew Jack Spicer and Robert Duncan and was instrumental in bringing them to Vancouver. She was a music student at Berkeley when they were all there. Robin was there and Spicer and Duncan. She knew Spicer in particular. So she was important in bringing them up here. She was teaching Arts 1 at UBC during the early 60s. Warren had got a job up here on the Henry James ticket. So, she was an important figure. And she and Robin, when she left Warren, she came out as a lesbian. And she and Robin cooperated on buying the Trafalgar Street duplex. So, an up-down duplex. So she and her partner of that time, I think it was Wendy Burton, and Robin and his partner lived up. It was an up-down arrangement, but they were besties, you know, best friends forever. And so Ellen would start, right? She just started to introduce me as Robin's biographer. I would go, excuse me? What?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I had applied sometime in, I don't know, the first decade of the 2000s, I can't remember when, for a grant to do a biography, and it didn't come through. And so for me, that was that. I can't do this without money. I can't do it without support, right? But she persisted. So when somebody keeps calling you that, you know, after a while you begin to think, well, I don't know. I'll throw in another application. And lo and behold, money came through. And so away we went. But by that time, it was 2008. Robin, of course, was pleased about these things. He was pleased that I was going to be his biographer, as Ellen said, but he was fading cognitively because the brain cancer was doing its thing at that point. I do remember, though, in April of 2008, when the grants for the SSHRC were announced, Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada, so they give scholarly grants in the arts, and I got it. First thing he did was invite me along on a 2-week trip to Idaho. He wanted to go on another tour. I think he knew he was fading, but he wasn't exactly clear on, you know, the details himself. So we went. David rented a van, and I got in the back with my brand new camera that the SSHRC had paid for, and off we went to Idaho. And we toured the places. We went north to south in Idaho. I met the folks. We went to the graveyards. We went to all the places he'd grown up in. I met his sister. I met his brother. Hope was pretty compromised herself in health at that point, and Gus had already begun to slide into dementia, but met them nonetheless. Met Millie Blazer, his sister-in-law, met his nephew and his nephew's partner. So that was a big trip. That was a big trip for us. Went to Boise and Twin Falls and Pocatello. lava hot springs and Blazer, Idaho, which has population zero. But there is a sign by the railway tracks that says Blazer. So
far out. So you got a picture of that.
I did, yeah. Yes. Yeah. One of the great disappointments for me of the publication of this biography with the pictures. I have many, many, many pictures of Blazer. Better ones than the ones that went in there. And ones that would have fleshed out each chapter. The pictures are very spotty. But two things. I was limited in the number of pictures I could use. And secondly, every picture, including not just who took it, but there has to be a model release for everybody shown in the picture before Palgrave will publish it. Quite legalistic that way. So that was impossible to get, because especially for the early pictures, most of the people are dead. And apparently it makes no difference, you know. No right. Permission, no publish. So, yeah, that was, it could have been more lavishly illustrated with all the different periods of his life better represented visually. Mm-hmm. But you got what you got. So
basically you had the basis of chapter one in your back pocket before you even started.
Well, no, not really. I mean, meeting the folks was one thing. I mean, knowing the place, seeing the places, I got a feel for that area. It was helpful. Was very helpful. Mm-hmm. And I also got a sense of what Robin's family was like. That was helpful too. But in terms of putting the chapter together, no, you know, I had to work that out through the archives. Yeah.
In the foreword, there's a line that says, "Nothing mattered more to him than poetry, and his life story is inextricable from its working out of a poetic practice."
Yeah.
There's also the line, "For Blazer, poetry was, above all, a way of being in the world." When I read these lines and think of the title, "A Literary Biography of Robin Blazer, Mechanic of Splendor," I think it's evocative, unusual and evocative. Tell us about the title.
Okay. The title itself, the phrase Mechanic of Splendor, the two lines that you just read. I mean, I meant those lines that you read, from the foreword, just literally, that Robin didn't see poetry as a activity separate from life. It was a way of relating. It was a way of being in the world. I can't say that more fundamentally. It was simply true of the way he was. And I mean, it might sound a bit, I don't know what the word is, these days, no one listens to poetry, as Jack Spicer said, right? But Robin didn't think that way. He just didn't think that way. Poetry was active, alive in the world, and he would talk to anyone about it. He had no sense at all that this was an elitist activity for university professors, mm-hmm. you know. So he would address the mailman if the mailman would listen, and talk about poetry to anybody at all. He thought it was the culture that wrongly separated things out like that. That it was the culture that made people think, I mean, the way that it was presented through universities and you know, kind of abandoned by the media and so on and so forth, as an actual viable area of way to engage with the world, right? Mm-hmm. That, in fact, it was a viable way to engage with the world. It was relational thinking, and that anybody could access it. It wasn't elite, you know? So he acted on that.
Right.
You know, he simply... and. In terms of how he lived the poetry. That is, he lived in such a way that he was conscious of the kinds of relationships he was inside of and always trying to form. And for him, it was always trying to go further, more relationship, go outward, mm-hmm. outward all the time, mm-hmm. you know, instead of kind of closing in. So always he was inside this kind of network of things. So the chapter in this biography, I think it's chapter six or seven, context as explanation. That was just literally so, that if you want to understand something, it doesn't matter what it is, you can get the context of it, because that's where you will, find the meaning of it. He taught like that too. His arts and context courses were exactly that, arts in context. So he would set up these, polylogues amongst the arts. I took his modernist course as a student, an undergraduate student at Simon Fraser, and it was a marvel. He had, it was structured this way. He had lectures, once a week lectures, and he would do all the lectures. And then he had breakout seminars. So there was one on poetry, one on theater, one on visual art, one on music. And there were TAs for each of those seminars. He took the poetry one, but they were not really TAs. They were full-fledged faculty members. It was like extravagant beyond belief, this course. So he would start, he would start with generally just a period. He had one on the Renaissance, one on modernism, 20th century art and literature. And he would, take a writer and then put that writer beside an architect or a painter or, a piece of music or something, and try to get them all talking to each other. Mm. So if you wanted to know what that means, the answer would be, well, look at this and look at this and where does it fit here? And that context is explanation.
Mm-hmm. A poet is a time mechanic, not an embalmer.
Yeah.
Is a Spicer line.
Yes, it
so
is.
So there's
yes.
an allusion to that then.
Yeah, sure. Mechanic of Splendor is actually a line, and darned if I can, from the Holy Forest, darned if I can remember which poem it's in right now. I have to say, the original title of this biography was Performing the Real. So it was going to be Performing the Real, a literary biography of Robin Blazer, because that seemed to be very, very accurate to his process, as accurate as I could get in a phrase. You had to perform poetry, because you could no longer rely on the culture to just give you the context. You had to supply the performance of it. And what did you want to perform? You wanted to perform the real. What else was there to perform? Right. And one of my readers thought that had connotations with performance theory, and so that's why we changed it to Mechanic of Splendor.
Right.
So I thought I thought that was an okay title because it had something to do with making, as in the mechanical, mm-hmm. something constructed, and then splendor is what? It's rather an ephemeral thing that you.
It's this, it's the yes. cover. It's I the mean, cover. You look yeah. at that really says it, that photograph.
Yeah.